You're listening to Sunnyside Up, a B2B podcast that brings you the juiciest insights from go-to-market leaders and practitioners.
Hey everyone, welcome back to Sunnyside Up. I'm your host, Chris Moody. Today, I'm very excited to talk with Uzair Dada on demystifying account-based growth. Uzair, tell everyone who you are and who Iron Horse is.
Hey, thanks, Chris. Thanks for having me there. Excited about the conversation. It's been something we've been talking about for a bit. So I'm the founder and CEO of Iron Horse. We're a growth marketing agency based out of Bay Area, but really global footprint. Working with you guys for a while now on a lot of account-based joint customers, so that's been fun. We are focused on emerging growth companies for us. That's sort of companies with 100 million to a billion in revenue, and enterprises, which are a billion plus. And kind of the areas where we do a lot of stuff in is really, we are starting at the audience obsession that I know you and I both are very excited about. We then formulate the whole go-to-market strategy, a full funnel strategy, thinking about how to do what to do and how to bring in sales and marketing together. Important part is, how do we connect the tech stack? We all own these amazing Ferraris, but we drive them like Priuses. Not that there's anything wrong with Priuses, but I want to drive my Ferrari fast. And then lastly, I want to make sure that we have a optimization view to execution. Sometimes we all get sort of lazy and set and forget. So that's kind of what we're focused on, working with our customers and partners like you guys to make good happen.
Love it. Love it. And one thing we talked about was professional services and that entire industry. And, you know, we know that there are huge opportunities for account-based growth there, but everyone doesn't always think about account-based with professional services. So what opportunities do you see there?
Yeah, I mean, professional services, and I'd say broadly business services, right? So I'd put everything from tax and advisory services, like your accounting firms of the world. I'd put everything from org consulting services in there. I would put everyone from your traditional management consulting firms or consulting firms in there. I'd put everyone from sort of marketing and media agencies in there. So if you start thinking, and then of course, all your IT services, right? And infrastructure service, it is massive, first of all, right? There's thousands and thousands of companies that do this, and a lot of them have size. We were doing sort of a TAM exercise, and I think there were, like, I mean, it's ridiculous. Like, if you drew the line at $100 million, there was an insane amount of companies. But they're not marketing savvy. They're not even sales savvy. It was something that was started with on a relationship basis. These things have been around in a lot of cases from a long time ago, and the business is done in still the old school way. The growth is really not that core of focus for them. Or if it is, it's sort of, they don't know how to do scalable growth. So I feel like, but one of the things they have that no one else has, the magic ingredient, is content. It's thought leadership, which all of us struggle with, right? But for us tech marketers and others, we struggle with not having good content, because content is the core ingredient for driving a conversation. They have that, but they don't have the other pieces. And so to me, it's just fascinating to see, how do you bring kind of that discipline in an organization where they lead with IP, which is something that is the most important ingredient, but they don't have the sales and marketing execution engine. So if we could infuse that and do that in an account-based way, which is how they're set up organically, magic should happen.
Yeah, I love that. And you mentioned the relationships. And, you know, I think we would both agree there's almost this traditional one-to-one approach that's happening with a lot of business services companies. How can sales and marketing help to expand beyond that and think about scale?
Yeah, so I'd say it's one-to-one in an interesting way. It's one-to-one. Literally, me to you. I know the CEO of the company. I know the CMO or CRO of the company. It's not one-to-account as much. So they are doing everything from a person-to-person relationship, which is awesome, right? Which is truly awesome. But that's narrow. So the ability for them to land and expand is much greater. But they are so focused on land. And the other thing that happens, if you are a Deloitte or if you're an Accenture or even like a mid-tier firm, right? You are very functionally set up. So I am the re-engineering guy, or I am the CRM guy, or I'm the ERP guy. So you only care about that, and you sort of have a little bit of turf protection. So you don't want to bring others in as much. So that's also incentivized. I don't know how that structure plays in. Also plays into not allowing others to come in and take an account-based approach. So for us, if we can, as sales and marketers, go and kind of give them the lens of, here is what an overall account opportunity looks like for you that you may not even have been considering. Yes, you know these one or two or three or 10 people, but did you know there are these other 25 people in that space that actually have a pretty important role that you may be wanting to talk to and expand just your little part of the business, not even other things that exist? I think they'll be very open to it. And so I think there is an opportunity, a little bit of just they think they know and they need to be sort of made aware there's more to it. And so when you show them something like you guys as a platform or any other layered intent structures to show them, wow, there's all this awesome information that exists. It's like the light bulb in the room moment, right? They're like, holy crap, that's pretty awesome. I didn't know I could have that. I didn't know I could do that. So I think there is a, it's an environment that has been historically not as tech savvy. They're tech savvy for their customers, very tech savvy. They're not as tech savvy for themselves.
Yeah, that, it makes a lot of sense. It feels somewhat common sense too, right? Like if yes. You combine the technology where you could get the intent to say, hey, this person that you know well, that you work with, that's two doors down from your office is searching for this too. Let's go have a conversation. You could almost bridge that traditional person to person with the technology, right?
Yeah, and I think there's that part, but I also think that probably the org design, org structure, comp models also probably play a role, because as I said, in a lot of ways, because of that relationship stuff, you have sort of the old school mentality of I'm going to lose control, rather than it's thinking about I'm going to grow the overall opportunities. I'm sure, you know, we all know how important it's not just about the marketing part, but it's about the sales part. So structurally, I think is a very important thing to sort of think about how they're comped, how they're structured. But from an opportunity perspective, the first part is just awareness. I just didn't know that this was possible. I just didn't even know that these guys were looking at my competitors. I mean, forget about just my own stuff. Like light bulb in the root moment. Do you know that, hey, they're working with you, but they're looking at Accenture and EY on the same topic. Oh my God, like I should be doing something about it. So not that you want to lead with fear, but sort of back to awareness. Be aware of what's happening. And I think when they understand it, there is almost an appetite, because they're extremely smart, IQ-based professionals to want more and want more fast, right? So once you get the hook, once you get the awareness, there is an enormous appetite to make it happen, because it just helps them do what they do. And they're wired that way.
Yeah, I love that. I love that. What are some of the challenges that business services companies face and prioritizing and scaling thought leadership? Because you mentioned they have a ton of it already. How do they start to prioritize and think about the expansion of doing business differently?
Yeah, so I think I'd say it's the root cause is the top, right? Which is, it's a partner-led model. It's a service line-led model. It's a vertical-led model. So it's a functional matrix. It's vertical meets function. Each person is his own P&L. Each one is partner-led. So what happens? I'm the most important thing. And there's 200 of you or more that are the most important thing, right? So it becomes complicated. So if you look at large companies or even smaller companies that are set up this way, they have too many doorways. They try to cram everything they have in a place because they're like, okay, this is my front of my house. It needs to look pretty. I need to be on there. I need to make sure that my doorway is open and people see it. Well, the problem is there's too many doorways. I just don't know where to go. I'm confused. I bail completely. So I think prioritization, period, in terms of who am I talking to and what's my outcome, is something they don't do well, right? Once you get through the home doorway, and they actually, by the way, the other thing that's interesting is they all believe my front door is the only door you come through. So they're obsessed with the front door, with the homepage. Some of them that are more tech forward will do a good job of, of their service line pages or product pages to be more thoughtful. But even there, you know, the classic is if you ask them, who are you going after? The infamous Fortune 2000 companies. Okay, that's just being lazy. You got to be thinking about really, why are you saying that? What is it that you think they will buy? Not all Fortune 2000 companies are going to buy from you. So they have not invested enough in saying within the Fortune 2000 companies, what makes the right fit, and should focus on that more. So I think there's an opportunity of prioritization. Once I do that, I should be able to draw the line of what matters, right? So it's sort of but you have to start at the top. You need to have a clear strategy. You need to have clear ICP and persona focus. You need to have an intent structure built in to say who within this pool. And then once I have it, I can say, okay, what should I talk to them about? But they go straight into, I've got all this IP. I've got to go show this out. And why isn't anyone consuming it? Well, you're talking to a person who may not care about this topic. You need to talk to the person who does care about this topic, right? And then the other part is, I think a lot of them also overinvest in fat content, right? Everything is gated. It's kind of your thought leadership, white paper, ebook, research report, which is awesome. But that's one data point. That's one touch point. What do I do after that? So derivative content is not really there. Yeah, right. And the derivative content that exists is in the form of your weekly or quarterly or monthly newsletter. Who reads a newsletter nowadays? Like, you know, we're sort of done beyond it. We expect a higher degree of curation, personalization that matters to us based on what we are looking for. So I think that's the moving from sort of not just focus on what content, but moving to more of a personalization structure at large, and then on a one-to-one basis going beyond that, massive opportunity.
Yeah, I think that is a huge opportunity. The counter to worrying about the front door, the homepage, right? I always go back to the beginning of content marketing events and Marcus Sheridan, right? Like when he was running a poll company, for those who don't know, when he was running a poll company, he decided he wanted to answer every single question about polls. So it was not thinking, what's the big, huge thing to attract them? It was, people have a lot of questions. If I go to the job site and watch every single thing that happens, I should answer every single question.
Yes.
And then when someone wants an answer to that question, they'll come to me for that answer. So if you kind of compare that huge gated content and the beautiful homepage and looking very official and Fortune 2000-esque, right? With, let's just answer all the questions. What kind of balance do you think firms should start to strike there?
Yeah, and the good is, I don't think you need to compromise one or the other. I think there's a space for both, but I think it's sort of being intentional about each piece of real estate, your digital real estate should serve a purpose. If your homepage is telling them about you and making them sure that they understand your reach or your whatever else, then focus on that. It's when you try to answer the 100 questions on every page is when this thing becomes a problem, right? So I think it's bringing that intention to the micro journeys that need to exist within the organization, within the environment that you have digitally. And the good part is, even there with the tools that we have, things like demand base, that hooking up with something like IntelliMize or Mutiny from a personalization perspective, or Salesforce or Marketo or HubSpot, and all of it together gives me so much latitude now to be able to intercept if you came through an SEM ad or you came through an email or if you came through wherever else. I can triangulate where you are in your conversation arc and serve you something on the same page. So I don't think we need to overly compromise. We're not dealing in a static world anymore, right? We are dealing in a dynamic world. So I think we have a lot more control to, I guess, serve many different constituents and perhaps be able to optimize for more than one goal within an environment. So I think our thinking still goes back to, it's the static environment and I have to do it this way. That's not the case anymore. So I think we need to evolve that thinking. But it's still extremely important to have clarity of outcomes. You can't have a page be dealing with 18 things. If you have more than two things, you're doing something wrong, right? I think so. The intentionality is a very important part, that if there was one takeaway for anybody thinking about this, I think that would be that.
Okay, great. How can AI and new technologies help companies improve their targeting and personalization? You mentioned a couple.
Yeah. So to me, I think the personalization stuff is awesome. So IntelliMize, which is a partner of yours and ours, we really like them. We're using them a lot in a lot of different places. And Mutiny is very similar. But one of the cool things IntelliMize does is they have a cookie-less approach. So even on your first visit, I can derive who you are and give you an experience. Second is they have an AI-based model. So I love this because, you know, we all get very excited about words and design. Because of course we are all experts, right, Chris? Like we know it all. So we have a lot of opinions. But why are we getting so freaking, you know, kind of wrapped up around the ankle about this is right or this is wrong? Let's test it. let's try it. So the coolest thing to me in that I'm, one of the things I see is with AI-based personalization technologies, right? The ability for us to take the emotion out of it, because both of us are guessing at the end of the day, right? We may have some data to derive it, but we're still guessing. But the ability for us at scale to test and optimize, we've been doing this in the ad space forever, right? Google's been doing it. All the DSPs have been doing it. We just are bringing it here. So it's novel to us within this landscape in the ABM lens, but it's been around for a while. I think the other part that is going to be awesome, and I'm sure you guys are working on it and everyone else, is the ability to find better needle in the haystack model. I mean, segmentation today still is much more of a art and science problem, right? Like you really have to think about it. And if we can refine how we segment, the ability for us to be efficient and surgical is amazing. But the amount of wasted dollars, paid media dollars that happen in marketing is seriously criminal. It's insane, right? So I think there's an enormous opportunity to bring efficiency based on AI and insights. So to me, those are the areas that I am most excited about that I think from an immediacy perspective, because we all are very impatient, I think have the biggest opportunity to make short-term impact.
Awesome. A couple of things I've been seeing on LinkedIn lately, a lot lately, which is kind of a red alert siren going off in my head, right? We set this up talking about account-based growth, and that's what you and I had talked about. I've seen a lot of posts lately on the problems with ABM and is ABM really a thing? And there's so much confusion and misunderstanding of what account-based marketing really is and you know, the reasons why we called it account-based growth. I see the same thing happening for intent data. It's people who are using it on the surface level and not even really acting upon the data and how to use the data. So there seems to be a lot of misinformation that's going on in the space right now. We're working to have better conversations around that, but I'd love to get your thoughts on why you even position it as account-based growth and if any of that is driving you crazy today.
It is. I can't stand the M, you know, and, you know, all our friends who came up with the M and ABM, you know, it's like, you know, thank you for doing that because you confused the world. I mean, the natural part is back to everything we talked about is based on what am I trying to accomplish? ABM is meant to be driving efficient pipeline and sales. It's to grow efficiently. That's the purpose. That's kind of what I'm trying to do. So how is that marketing? It's not marketing. It's not sales. It takes two to tango, right? And so to me, it's a very simple thing. Just by definition, you artificially said, this is the only thing I'm going to focus on and someone else is going to focus on something. Well, that's not true. If we, and we've talked about this oftentimes, if we as marketers are not making our sales folks successful, we shouldn't have a job. Period. So, and the most ignored area in ABM is that bridge between marketing and sales. Right. We are obsessed with that area, right? The amount of time marketers say, oh yeah, you know, these guys are now trained on demand base or trained on XYZ or Salesforce or Marketo or whatever else. And yeah, we did a half day workshop or we did two Zoom sessions. So yeah, check the box. There is no concept of that this you need to be a change management process. And it's beyond the CRO and CMO handshaking and said, yes, we are aligned. That happens. That's great. Again, check the box. Alignment starts at the top, but happens at the bottom. So if there is no structure to govern and ensure that it sticks, it's going to fall apart. And what's going to happen and how is it going to fall apart? It's going to start with a rep coming in and saying, the lead you sent me sucked. Really? Did the lead really suck? Or did you just call them twice and gave up, right? Or why are you just focused on that one lead, right? And so I feel we've over-indexed on the, because of the ABM on the M side, and there is a lot of stuff for AB, account-based growth to work that exists on the sales side. And I think the next generation of evolution and sort of innovation really needs to happen to bring those two things together and drive accountability, make sure that the AE managers and SDR managers are looking at when an account became qualified, that there was follow-up, that there were 18 touches that needed to happen across all different channels, because that's what it takes to win a deal today, right? So even if that's not happening, holding them accountable and not just going by listening to their rep and saying, oh yeah, he tried and it doesn't work. We need better leads. So I think it's sort of automation is sort of becoming a lazy button. And I think we need to get above and beyond that. We need to bring that human part back. And I think if we can do that and bring the accountability and governance, I think that's what it takes to succeed. I think at a leadership level, when you go to them and show them what it is, when you show them the power of it, there's no one nodding their head yes, right? Everyone gets it. But it's easy to buy technology. Change takes some effort. And so I think we all collectively in the ecosystem sort of need to work toward it, because as a tech vendor, you sold it. Great. Now you're just like, okay, make sure it's on and you move on. And another area where there is, we are obsessed with new logos. We don't invest enough time in customer success, ensuring that not only did they buy, but that it stuck quickly, because if it didn't stick quickly, your shelf life is coming up pretty soon. Right. So those to me are just areas that it's not that it's not important. We've just over-indexed on the left side, on the marketing side, and now we need to start focusing on the sales side for the two things to work together.
We could spend a whole day talking about that. Yes. We could probably also rattle off a bunch of tech vendors that may be creating problems for themselves by acquiring too many customers that they're not actually making successful. So very important points for everyone to pay attention to here. And we're coming up on time. We close out with consistent questions. We cover good reads and good people, and then how to get in touch with you. So the first, is there a book, blog, newsletter, or podcast that you'd recommend to our listeners?
Yeah, I love Decoder by Nilay Patel. I think it's just fascinating to hear about history. I was looking at the last one I was doing when I was working out was the history of AI and OpenAI stuff. And then there was an interview with the CEO of NVIDIA. And it was just fascinating to learn about the culture they built and how it came about. I think that was really cool. The other one I like that's also along the line before any history buffs, I love South Asian history. So it's the show called Empire. And it's really cool. And even though I'm South Asian, I just didn't know all the things that happened and all the little things happened that made the entire environment change. So I think both of those were two of my favorite things that I'm listening to notice.
Awesome. We'll check that out. And then good people. If there are any inspirational people in the B2B space you recommend we have on the podcast, we'd love to know of them.
Yeah, one, I think, and he was an ex-demand baser in the day, Avnish Sahai. Avnish is just amazing, amazing human. He's on the board of HubSpot now. He's retired. He was at Google. He was Salesforce. But when it comes to partner selling and partner go-to-market stuff, he's the man. And he's just incredible knowledge and a good friend. So I would definitely have Avnish. Another good friend that I work with a lot, and I think it's interesting for you guys to bring in sort of a, not just a sales lens, but a sales and investor lens. So a good friend of mine, Bruce Chesbrough, who's an operating partner at Nemon Capital. And he's been a lifelong sales leader, and now he's sort of an operating partner helping NMC portfolio companies sort of become amazing sales engines, and a huge believer in ABM and kind of how it is needed to make transform sales. I love his perspective. So I think Bruce would be a really good person. And then my colleague, Monica Venke. Monica is just amazing mind, ex head of Forrester's B2B business, but from a thinking about persona journey and then sort of really cohesively thinking about how to drive people from left to right. We all, in our haste of, we need to close now, we need bottom of the funnel now. But there is no magic wand, guys. Let me tell you that. So just having the foresight to really be disciplined about structure and thinking, she'd be an amazing person.
Awesome. Great suggestions. We will reach out to them. And then last and most importantly, how can people get in touch with you after this episode?
Yeah, reach out. My email is my first name, uzair at ironhorse.io. Available, happy to connect. Reach out to me on LinkedIn and look forward to continuing the conversation.
Awesome. Thanks so much for your time.
Thanks, Chris.
Today's episode is made possible by Demandbase. Demandbase is smarter GTM for B2B brands to help marketing and sales teams spot the juiciest opportunities earlier and progress them faster. Thanks so much for tuning in to this episode of Sunnyside Up. If you liked what you heard, please rate and review us and subscribe to our show on iTunes, Spotify, or wherever you consume podcasts. You can also find us on YouTube and Demandbase TV.